Fighting fear in the Alamo City, site of a federally mandated quarantine. Our conversation with Mayor Ron Nirenberg and a whole lot more today on the Texas Standard.
Texas Standard is a production of KUT Austin, KERA North Texas, Houston Public Media, and Texas Public Radio in San Antonio, with support from Rand Group, software delivered as promised. No surprises.
I'm David Brown. The latest on spring break extensions, school shutdowns, and sports cancellations in Texas and further afield amid coronavirus concerns. Also, a Supreme Court win for the Trump administration's Remain in Mexico policy for asylum seekers, but some aren't even getting to wait in Mexico for their hearings as they're boarded onto planes and told to seek asylum first in Guatemala. That story coming up and a whole lot more when the Texas Standard gets underway right after this. No matter where you are, you're on Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. Great to have you with us on this 12th day of March 2020, a day in which, if your experience has been anything like ours, almost all of the conversation has been focused one way or another on how our lives are being affected by concerns about the spread of the coronavirus. In Houston, the Chronicle reported on what appeared to be the first local transmission of the pathogen in a Montgomery County man who hadn't recently traveled outside of Texas. Now, this marks a new but expected phase, what's commonly called community spread. What's interesting and somewhat misleading, if you've seen those maps of confirmed cases in Texas, you know, one might think there's a major problem west of Houston on I-10 in Bexar County in San Antonio. What we're actually seeing on those maps are cases right there, at least in Bexar County in San Antonio, cases within a federal quarantine zone at Lackland Air Force Base. Now, part of what officials must be battling right now are fears from the community, and San Antonio Mayor Ron Nirenberg has the complicated job of both making sure containment efforts are in place while offering reassurances to the public. Mayor Nirenberg, you're statewide in the Texas Standard. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I know this is a tough job for you. I want to ask, though, last I heard, the risk assessment was rather low for local spread of coronavirus still in Bexar County and San Antonio. Is that still the status?
That's still where we are right now. Of course, we're obviously ramped up into phase two of this effort, which is preparations for potential community spread. And so we are urging the precautions that, you know, health departments have been making for a long time now in terms of social distancing, certainly staying home if you're sick, et cetera. And as the community spread issue becomes pretty clear in other communities, other cities, obviously we are in heightened awareness and preparedness. We also need to, obviously, everywhere in the United States, step up testing, which is underway. And until that really happens, we're sort of operating with best data, but not adequate data.
I want to get back to testing, if we can, in just a moment. But I know that your city received more passengers from the Grand Princess Cruise Lines yesterday. Exactly how many cruise line passengers are now under quarantine at Lackland Air Base?
We have a little over 100 at this point from the Grand Princess, and that number has fluctuated. You know, frankly, we've had some documented challenges with information, but we are working now with HHS in terms of how these folks are going to be transferred into the quarantine zone and out of the quarantine zone when they finish their duration. And in a safe manner, that means that they don't come in contact with the general public. What we have come to an agreement with HHS is, given the fact that every city in the country is stepping up its preparedness measures, we also have to make sure that we don't have a surge of evacuees so that it exceeds our own capacity to deal with community spread.
Well, yeah.
So the HHS has agreed to take folks from other states to quarantine in their home states. That way they spread the burden and allow every community the ability to flatten that curve, as people have been talking
about. Yeah, you're referring to something that Texas Governor Greg Abbott was underscoring. He said that only Texas passengers quarantined at the base. But I want to get back to something that you had were mentioning about the dangers of resources, local resources,
yeah,
potentially getting overwhelmed. You told the Washington Post earlier this week that the response from the federal government and the CDC, especially regarding these quarantines at Lackland, has been disconcerting. Why?
Well, there's been a real, lack of information, frankly, that has gotten better. The coordination and communication with boots on the ground has been much better over the last few days. It's taken some work, obviously, in concert with our governor's office as well as our federal delegation. But, you know, initially there were a lot of changes in protocol that we were requesting wasn't being heeded. We had obviously the well-documented issue with the premature release of a quarantined individual. That's been rectified. There's some changes in protocol that have been made.
Mm-hmm.
In this latest cohort of evacuees, though, our concern has been exactly what you said, making sure that the surge of evacuees and eventual need for treatment doesn't exceed our own local capacity, because we're having to, you know, step up capacity in the event of potential community spread.
All right. So if someone is found with coronavirus on Lackland right now, are they treated at some kind of health facility on base? They're not having to leave base?
So if they are positive for coronavirus or exhibit symptoms and need to be checked, they're moved off the base.
Okay.
They're moved into the Texas Center for Infectious Diseases. That's a state facility. And they're, you know, given the proper CDC protocol treatment, and you know, again, if they test positive for coronavirus, they have an extended stay here. But they're done. All of that happens in isolation, and our the purpose of all this is to make sure it doesn't flow into our local hospital ecosystem, because every city in the country,
right,
has limited resources in that regard, and we're not a small city either.
Yeah, and you're juggling sort of local, state, and federal officials here. So I want to get back though to this testing question. What is the availability of testing? Because this was obviously an issue with that,
yeah,
early release situation.
So the number of tests has increased significantly. Availability of tests has increased significantly this week. And our health authority has told me that we've got enough tests available in accordance with the CDC protocol. And that's where it gets interesting, because the CDC has some pretty strict protocol with regard to who is administered the test. Now, if folks show up because they have seen what's going on in other communities and they're just concerned because, someone around them has had a cold or something like that, they don't have any symptoms, they won't be administered the test because, number one, the tests are not, they're still scarce, they're still working,
right,
their way out
right,
to all these communities. But two, an asymptomatic individual is very unlikely to have reliable data from a test.
Mm.
Does require symptomatology that, you know, isn't
yeah,
just,
yeah,
from a blood draw.
That's very important. San Antonio Mayor Ron Nirenberg, thanks so much for your time. We certainly do appreciate it, sir.
Thanks for all you're doing.
U.S. Supreme Court yesterday affirmed the Trump administration's Remain in Mexico policy for asylum seekers, but hundreds who reached the Texas-Mexico border are not getting a chance to make their pitch for asylum in the U.S. at all. Instead, many are put on planes to Guatemala and told to ask for asylum there. Texas Public Radio's Ronaldo Leaños Jr. has more.
After traveling for weeks from Honduras, Alicia says she was floored when a U.S. border official raised the possibility that she and her teenage son would be sent to Guatemala.
I told him I had nothing to do with Guatemala and that I didn't know anyone in Guatemala, so what could I possibly do there?
Alicia says she never got a chance to fully explain why she was seeking protection. The interview only lasted 5 minutes. Then they waited. She and her son spent another week in immigrant detention. It was extremely cold. She says the guards yelled at them, saying ugly things. And then one morning, before sunrise, they were escorted onto a bus headed to a nearby airport.
We weren't sure if they were sending us to Guatemala, if they'd send us to Mexico, or if they'd send us to El Salvador or Honduras. We had absolutely no clue.
Alicia is one of more than 800 migrants from Honduras and El Salvador who have been sent to Guatemala under an asylum cooperative agreement. The Trump administration says the agreement has helped drive down the number of migrants asking for asylum in the U.S. Here's Mark Morgan, acting commissioner for Customs and Border Protection, last week.
For the ninth straight month in a row, we've continued to make incredible progress along the southwest border.
But critics say the U.S. is sending asylum seekers back to dangerous places. Guatemala is grappling with gang violence and economic hardship. Alicia and her son left Honduras for the same reasons. Protesters gather every weekday outside the Brownsville South Padre Island International Airport. Joshua Rubin is with a group witness at the border.
These people fled a situation most likely that threatened their lives, and we're flying them right back into those places where their lives are in danger.
From beyond a chain link fence, the protesters bear witness to shackled migrants being escorted onto planes. Diane Sande is an activist from Brooklyn, New York. She says airport officials have parked vehicles in front of them to block their view and even sent police officers to move them.
I asked them how they slept at night and how they would feel if this were their children and their families. They wouldn't even look us in the eye.
Once in the air, many of the migrants still don't know where they're going, says Sharnia Krishnaswamy with Amnesty International USA.
Not even understanding that that's where you're going and only realizing it upon landing. And that complete lack of orientation, that complete lack of counseling, I think exacerbates existing traumas and creates new ones.
Krishnaswamy recently traveled to Guatemala to document how this agreement is playing out on the ground there. She says these disoriented migrants are given very little time to make a life-changing decision.
They're told that they have 72 hours basically to decide whether they want to seek asylum in Guatemala, whether they want to accept voluntary return.
Only about 16 migrants have decided to apply for asylum in Guatemala, officials there say. The others are mostly unaccounted for. Some have gone home, while others, like Alicia, plan on trekking north again. Alicia asked that we not use her full name because she still hopes to make it to the U.S. one day to reunite with family.
I'm hiding in my country while I try to gather some money to try and return.
The U.S. wants Guatemala to accept even more migrants. The administration also hopes to start sending migrants back to Honduras under a similar agreement. I'm Reynaldo Leaños Jr. in Brownsville.
Social media editor Wells Dunbar is with us. What are you seeing out there, Wells?
Hi, David. Well, the increasing impact of the coronavirus becoming apparent for many Texans overnight in a welter of news. For many of our friends and listeners, COVID-19 is primarily being experienced via a change to their work routine. Here's some of what we're hearing. Through Facebook, Wendy Reed says, "My company is having people work remotely for the rest of the month." But she adds, "I'm trying to figure out how I'll implement homeschooling if and when my children's school gets closed." And Jen Wireman writes, "My partner and I are both contract workers that work directly with clients. We aren't worried about dying from COVID-19 since we aren't part of the demographic facing an elevated risk. But if we can't work, is our bank just going to let us take a month off for paying our mortgage? Somehow, I doubt it." Hearing from other folks about how their routines are changing, I'll be back with more later in the show.
How's your routine changing, Texas? Tweet us or join us on your social media platform of choice at Texas Standard. Wells Dunbar with more of your comments in 35.
Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas College Savings Plan, administered by the state of Texas. Families can save for tuition, room and board, books, and other qualified education expenses at eligible schools nationwide. Learn more at texascollegesavings.com.
A bit more on coronavirus in Texas here on The Standard. If part of what you want to do is get ahead of the disease, among the questions at the moment is this: should the governor declare a statewide emergency? Governor Greg Abbott set to have a call with mayors and county judges today. There's a possibility of a public health disaster declaration or an emergency declaration, according to the Dallas Morning News. That could mean 30 days of special power to order immunization, detention, isolation, quarantine, disinfection, decontamination, and that sort of thing. The likelihood of entire areas being placed under lockdown are slim, the Dallas News reports, but what an emergency declaration might also do is open the doors to making an aid request to the federal government, which has already committed just over $35 billion to Texas for preparedness efforts. But as our own Michael Marks reports, many Texas institutions aren't waiting around for some sort of emergency declaration.
Whether it's extending spring break, banning travel abroad, moving to online classes, or shutting down dorms, almost every college or university in Texas has made some change to their normal operations. Texas Tech University extended spring break by a week. Classes will be conducted online when students return on March 30th. The University of Texas at Austin, Texas Christian University, and Baylor University have the same plan. Texas A&M is extending spring break by 2 days, with classes there to resume on March 18th. Baylor and TCU will reevaluate whether to resume in-person classes by April 4th. This week, in-person classes were canceled at Rice University in Houston. Next week is spring break. One employee there has tested positive for the virus, and 14 people are in self-quarantine. In San Antonio, St. Mary's University, Texas A&M San Antonio, Trinity University, the Alamo Colleges District, and the University of Texas at San Antonio have all extended spring break by a week. Trinity University will also close its residence halls on Monday, March 16th, although some exceptions may be made for students who can't get home. The University of Texas Rio Grande Valley has restricted travel to some areas heavily affected by the virus, but so far hasn't made an announcement about class plans. Other schools haven't announced any changes yet. Those include Lamar University, Sam Houston State University, the University of Texas El Paso, and the University of North Texas, although that school will make an announcement about its plans today. For the Texas Standard, I'm Michael Marks.
Support for coverage of business comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping companies protect their drivers on the road. More at worksafetexas.com/onthejob.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. When you think of cities in the U.S. where the tech industry is booming, what places come to mind? Well, there's San Francisco, of course. You got Seattle, Austin, Texas. Well, over the past decade, these and other places, including Denver and San Jose, combined have gained more than 25% of the country's tech jobs. And a new study claims that not only is this concentration getting worse, the consequences are so serious that they demand federal intervention. Nicole Flato is an editor at CityLab, an urban policy news site, which has published a new article on this research. Nicole, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about who did this research in the first place and why.
So this research was primarily conducted by folks at the Brookings Institution, but it was in conjunction with or commissioned by the American Enterprise Institute. So those are both think tanks in D.C. That have looked at this phenomenon a number of times with the idea that they want to track why particular jobs flourish in certain places and not others. And certainly, as you alluded to, this gets into just how extreme that is in the tech sector. Because they've been looking at this issue for so long, they've gotten to the point where they are now recommending federal intervention, which is above and beyond what they've done in the past, which is to just observe the phenomenon. And that's really part of what's new here, based on the notion that despite attempts to kind of spread these jobs out more evenly, other local efforts really haven't been as successful as people might have hoped.
What are the disparities that they're noting between the tech haves and the have-nots?
Yeah, so essentially the idea is that there is this increasing disparity between places that are considered tech hubs and places that aren't. And what's happening is that despite some attempts to redistribute tech jobs, there are some cities that are getting not only an increasing number of tech jobs, but an increasing share of those jobs. There are other cities that are continuing to see decreasing numbers of tech jobs, or even if they're seeing an increase and it's considered kind of a single anecdotal case of a local win, in the big picture, they're actually not gaining traction relative to those winners. And the net effect is that some cities are seeing some of the problems of over-concentration, which include unaffordability, traffic, et cetera.
Right.
Whereas other places that are considered quote-unquote distressed are continuing to see their economies falter as the overall economy becomes more and more tech-focused.
So how could federal intervention make a difference specifically? I mean, what are you going to do? Pay companies to relocate?
So the notion is that there would be congressional investment in particular cities. They would pick a few of these cities, say 10, that are suffering from disinvestment and don't have enough share of the jobs, but have some potential to be hubs. So some of the factors that they look at are things like space and infrastructure, probably in many cases, they used to have more population than they do now, academic institutions that would support kind of research and talent. They also look at affordability. They look at whether there is some, you know, kind of burgeoning tech economy there now, as well as a number of other factors. And in some, what they're looking at is places where if they were to invest money and give it to the city, not so much to the venture capitalists, although certainly one of the ideas could be to give, you know, folks a tax break to come there. This funding can take different forms and it really hasn't been elaborated. Then they could create a hub, much like ones that already exist in places like Austin, where once a few companies come there, they've now created a new talent draw that then perpetuates the appeal of additional tech companies coming there as well.
I'm wondering if this, though, isn't a recipe for a greater disaster. I mean, there are a lot of cities that would rather not have the congestion. And you think about in other cases, in a pre-digital industrial era, you have places like Detroit, and you know, they suffered from the fact that they relied so much on the industry of that period, right? I mean, is there not a danger that you could create tomorrow's dinosaurs?
I don't know about tomorrow's dinosaurs, but certainly I think everywhere is worried about towing that balance between what is good growth and what is going to be creating unaffordability for cities. That's kind of one of the great challenges of our time is, you know, why is it that our growth is coming with so many challenges, right? But one of the theories is that the reason for that problem is that this growth is so concentrated, right? And that's where this research really comes in. So most cities are experiencing kind of level growth that, you know, is incremental over time. They're either seeing dramatic growth, and Austin is an example of that, where the number of tech jobs has skyrocketed and a lot of the problems that come with that have come to Austin. Or they're seeing probably a loss of jobs overall, distress in their economy, depopulation, and not that much in between. So that's the theory.
Is it time for the feds to intervene? Well, it's an interesting bit of research that is discussed in City Lab, which is an urban policy news site. We're going to have a link to the story over at texasstandard.org. And we've been talking with Nicole Flato, who's an editor at City Lab. Nicole, thanks for spending a couple of minutes with us on The Standard.
Thanks for having me.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas Oncology, with a reminder that March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. Screening can lead to early detection and is recommended for all men and women age 50 and older. More at texasoncology.com. Support for Texas Standard comes from TCU, where Horned Frogs strive to be responsible world citizens. More on how a trip to Norway challenged students' perspectives on mass incarceration and justice at tcu.edu/stories.
From the Texas Newsroom, I'm Joseph Leahy. Texas Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee says the federal government needs to ramp up local coronavirus testing to slow down the outbreak. Following a briefing from White House officials this morning, the Houston Democrat said her district is still unprepared to identify new cases.
I want more tests. I want people who have symptoms not to be afraid to come forward and to be able to get a legitimate test done appropriately and determine whether or not they have the coronavirus. That is the key. Since we are now past the point of containing, it is here.
According to Texas health officials, 15 cases have been identified in the Houston area. That includes a man in Montgomery County who did not travel outside the state. Texas is getting $35 million from a federal aid package to support the state's coronavirus response efforts. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz is temporarily closing his Washington, D.C. office amid reports an aide for a colleague has tested positive for the illness. The Texas Republican himself is wrapping up a 14-day self-quarantine after shaking hands with someone infected, but he says he feels fine. Meanwhile, fellow Texas Senator John Cornyn is not yet closing any offices. The NBA is suspending its regular season after a player tested positive for COVID-19. KERA's Hadi Mawagdi caught up with fans at last night's Mavericks game in Dallas.
Mavericks fan Jason Kilgore was disappointed about the news that the NBA was temporarily pulling the plug on the regular season.
I think it's a sad, sad day in the NBA, man. You know, we've been here for the last 5 hours. I hadn't seen anybody with coronavirus.
Kilgore wasn't the only one feeling bummed about the stoppage of play. Vincent Dominich says he loves the NBA. But what he says is important right now is staying alive.
Step up your life skills because you got to prepare for whatever. Basketball is honestly not even really in the picture. Let's be real.
Domenech echoed a statement stated several times on Wednesday night. If it can happen to an NBA player, it can happen to anyone. I'm Hadi Mawagdi in Dallas.
Nearly a fifth of Texas is experiencing some degree of drought, according to data the U.S. Drought Monitor released earlier today. A swath of counties in South Texas is dealing with extreme drought. One of them is Frio County. Jaime Lopez is an agent for Texas A&M AgriLife Extension in the area. He says ranchers are selling their cattle.
In fact, I talked to one this morning, a big rancher, and he is selling some of his cattle. He's thinning out, and he's got some buyers that are buying his cattle, but they're all moving north, is what he was telling me this morning.
Lopez says since January 1st, Frio County has only received an inch of rain. I'm Joseph Leahy for the Texas Standard.
33 minutes past the hour, Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. Lately, you've no doubt heard of large events being canceled, South by Southwest, anyone, and workplaces urging employees to stay home. In fact, it's hard to remember a time when this type of precaution became so widespread. And many of us wonder just how far all this might go. Well, you know, there might be a lesson or two one could extract from the world of tech, in particular, gaming, which on occasion replicates the real world, though perhaps what we're going through right now is replicating what happened in the world of Warcraft 15 years ago. Omar Gayaga is our go-to tech guy. Good to see you again, Omar.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me.
We were talking a little bit before we open up the microphones here. You were saying that back in 2005, in the world of Warcraft, there was a kind of what, pandemic?
There was an incident, yes.
An incident.
It was called the Corrupted Blood pandemic, which was sort of an unintentional effect of a game feature that was introduced as a raid. And a raid in World of Warcraft is where you get all your buddies together and you go take on this big challenge. It usually involves, you know, killing a monster or some sort of big loot-dropping creature. Mm-hmm. This villain, Hakkar the Soul Flayer, what he would do is he had a kind of disease that he would give you that would drain your character. Mm-hmm. But what happened unintentionally was it spread through pets and non-player characters beyond the original area it was intended for, and then it kind of went pandemic all across Azeroth, the planet that World of Warcraft takes place on.
We should back up just a bit for people who don't know about World of Warcraft, and this is not its heyday currently, right?
No, at its peak, it had about 12 million players.
Wow.
When this incident occurred, it was only about a year after it launched, so it was only about 2 million players, I think, at the time. And it's still around. People still play it, but, you know, it was a cultural force for a while. But, you know, what does this have to do with coronavirus?
Yeah.
What's interesting was how people behaved as this pandemic was spreading.
Say more about that. How did people behave?
Well, it might sound a little familiar. People were asked to self-quarantine, and they didn't do it.
Is that by self-quarantine, not playing the game?
Staying away from other players so that it wouldn't spread, you know, isolating themselves from big, densely populated areas. People didn't do that. There was not a lot of direction from Blizzard, the people who made the game, about what was going on, so people were confused and panicked. There was no authority consistently giving them advice on what to do. People would rush to help other players and heal them, and then they would get infected. Which kind of mirrors medical workers. You know, you had people hawking fake cures or spreading the disease intentionally in the game, you know, griefers. So, you know, which led, interestingly, to people studying what happened in World of Warcraft and seeing if it had any real-world implications.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Now, so this was something that was not baked into the system on purpose.
Right. I mean, they were able to fix it within a week, but in that week, you know, there were thousands of dead bodies in the streets. You know, people were panicking. People were staying away from the game or not playing it just so their characters would not get infected. And what interested researchers, epidemiologists, and people who study terrorism was, you know, is this a model for how people would behave in a real-world situation like this?
In fact, did epidemiologists and others actually research
papers published on
really?
The phenomenon, and then other people saying, oh, you can't model after a video game. But, you know, people were invested in these characters. You know, maybe they don't behave exactly the way they do in their own lives, mm-hmm. but they do care about these characters that they built up. They don't want them to die, and so they do take precautions. And in the real world, you see some of the same behavior as what was happening in World of Warcraft.
I wonder what other takeaways could be
extracted from what happened in World of Warcraft in 2005?
Yeah, I think, I mean, what the researchers were focusing on is, you know, do things like self-quarantining work? I mean, what should the messaging be during a pandemic? Things like, you know, what we're struggling with now, which is, you know, do people stay home from work when they're sick? When, you know, what is the motivation for not doing that? Should they be, you know, compensated for staying home? Issues like that. And these were all kind of brought to the fore, you know, 15 years ago in this game.
Do you think it's fair? I mean, as someone who lives in both the virtual and the real world?
I think, well, you know, as we see on Twitter and as we see now in other online forums, places where people dwell, is like people behave in exaggerated ways. You know, you could see in World of Warcraft people, you know, just for fun, spreading the disease intentionally just to see what would happen, or jumping into the game just to kind of get exposed and see what that was like. I don't think that's behavior that most people would model in the real world. So you kind of get this exaggerated kind of griefing behavior.
Does the experience from 2005 make you more or less optimistic about our ability to deal with a series of events like coronavirus?
I think what it demonstrates and what was interesting to researchers is that you can't really predict accurately how people will behave, that people will behave in irrational ways.
That's the wild card.
Yeah, that they will do things that you don't expect, and that, you know, the game itself was behaving in ways that the developers didn't intend. So that there's always these, yeah, exactly, wild cards. There's always these variables that you can't predict for.
Omar Gayaga is our resident tech expert, and he's here with us every Thursday. We've been talking about the World of Warcraft and how art imitates reality, and vice versa, I guess, in some cases. Omar, good to see you again, sir. Thanks so much for stopping in.
Thanks for having me. Stay safe.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Raise Your Hand Texas, working to strengthen public education for all students. More information at raiseyourhandtexas.org. The future of Texas is in our public schools. Support for Texas Standard comes from Galveston Island, honoring North American birds lost to extinction with the opening of the Lost Bird Project exhibition and the unveiling of the Eskimo Curlew Memorial Sculpture on March 29th. Galveston.com/lostbird.
You're listening to the Texas Standard. I'm Marika Flatt, travel editor with Texas Lifestyle Magazine, here with your weekend trip tip. Texas is known for its sprawling cityscapes, a mix of Southern and Western-inspired culture, and its outdoor getaways. Some of the best overnight adventures are found out in the Texas wild. So we thought we'd round up a few of the new venues that are embracing their outdoor roots and offering unique getaways that incorporate their natural surroundings for a one-of-a-kind overnight experience. Cypress Valley Canopy Tours offers a chance to go ziplining and stay in a tree. Deep in the heart of Central Texas, near the rolling hills and cool springs of Spicewood, the Yoki House is the newest addition to the resort. It's a fully equipped private forest sanctuary, nestled between two old-growth bald cypress trees that tower over a peaceful spring-fed creek. It has a king-size bed, a small kitchen, and a suspended single bunk in the living area that could be a haven for a young one. A 60-foot suspension bridge takes you to the separate bathhouse with a soaking tub. It sits at the edge of the ravine with floor-to-ceiling windows for bird watching and stargazing. Other treehouses at Cypress Valley Canopy Tours include the minimalist Juniper, which has a glamping vibe. The Nest sleeps up to six and has an outdoor shower. And the Loft Haven has its own soaking tub, a wraparound deck, and an indoor hammock. If a tropical vibe is your thing, you have to check out the fascinating hidden spot of Sun's Island. Located near Seguin, this is a real-life hidden tropical island on Lake Placid. It's accessible by a 100-foot private wooden bridge. Each Sun's Island cabana has a grill, so bring your own food and beverages, and you can rent rafts, paddleboards, and kayaks. And there's live music on the weekends. Now, if you choose to stay overnight, there are tents with cots and fans, or you can glamp nearby in an air-conditioned yurt-like structure. Located in the hill country village of Smithwick, west of Austin, Smithwick Castle and Lodge is a country castle nestled on 10 acres, featuring a creek, a pond, and grand old oak trees. Chickens, peacocks, and goats watch guard over the castle. The home decor is fun and funky, featuring hand-painted doors, wood-burning stone fireplaces, and a unique old-world brick courtyard. The five guest rooms sleep 10 comfortably, but the house can hold up to 16 for parties who rent out the whole lodge. Quirky and cool, Lucky Arrow Retreat opened in 2019 in Dripping Springs. The ranch-style property features 36 unique lodging options and an intimate event venue inspired by the surrounding Texas Hill Country. The accommodations range from laid-back yurts with vintage record players to secluded upscale cabins with shared hot tubs and fire pits. But the best part of the property is the hip beer garden next to the heated pool. In-room regional snacks and a gated footpath to Bell Springs Winery complete the local charm. And don't forget to sign the guest book as you leave, which is the outside of a silver Airstream trailer, which doubles as the guest check-in. And for a unique, secluded stay in the woods, check out Getaway, the startup that offers mindful escapes to tiny cabins nestled in nature. Right now, it's only available in a handful of American cities, including the DFW area. Getaway's tiny cabins are minimalist while still including all the modern comforts. Each is complete with a signature big window overlooking the scenery. That's your weekend trip tip. I'm Marika Flatt for the Texas Standard.
Now, of course, we get wanting to relax, but make sure you and yours are healthy enough for travel and follow all the precautions, so reminds Marika Flatt, travel editor for Texas Lifestyle Magazine. More at texasstandard.org. Some critics of art history have long complained that the standard canon leaves out or diminishes many women artists, even those as accomplished as their male contemporaries. Texas Public Radio's Dominic Anthony reports on a new front in the fight for recognition.
March is Women's History Month, and Art Pace and the San Antonio Museum of Art are trying to increase the visibility of women artists on one of the most popular websites in the world, Wikipedia. Male artists are overrepresented on Wikipedia, both in terms of sheer numbers and in the depth of the information on their pages. Sama and ArtPace want to change that.
I went to the main library this morning and checked out all of these books. Some may not have any women artists in them, but it just...
Art Plus Feminism is a nonprofit group. It's supported thousands of Wikipedia edit-a-thons around the globe over the past decade. Johanna Tesfai is the public programs manager at SAMA. She brought the edit-a-thon idea to San Antonio.
And it's difficult, y'all. It's so difficult because a lot of these artists, you know, they don't have pages, right? Because if you go back to...
About a dozen people showed up at SAMA for the first event. Some of the community editors found the lack of source material frustrating. Isa Aranda worked to expand the Wikipedia entry for the late Toni LaSalle, who developed the art history program at Texas Women's University and had an 8-decade career as an accomplished artist and academic. But Aranda struggled to find source material about LaSalle.
It's disheartening. It's disappointing. But you gotta fix it.
Is it surprising?
No. It's not surprising at all. Which is also disheartening. But we're working on it.
And LaSalle is unusual in that she even has a Wikipedia page. Tesfai worked to create new pages for several artists featured in SAMA's ongoing exhibition, Texas Women, A New History of Abstract Art.
So it's just, it's kind of wild noticing which artists are on Wikipedia because we have, I think, 17 to 18 artists represented in the show and only like 5 or 6 have Wikipedia pages dedicated to them.
And these are accomplished artists. The lack of representation is partly caused by what Wikipedia calls a notability test.
To be notable, you have to have sources written about you that don't include blog posts or press releases or personal artist websites.
Wikipedia did not respond to TPR's requests for comment, but because the notability rule relies on historical sources, if a history is skewed a certain way, Wikipedia entries about people from that history are also skewed. And art history leaves out many women.
Absolutely. I mean, as I was in grad school, getting my master's at UT Austin, and it's wild how many times you don't ever talk about women artists or think about their contributions to the world. It's really, you have to seek that information out on your own.
It's looking at the
kind of art history as a canon, and how art history is represented is just so many men, so many male artists, and typically women are left out of the art historical canon.
Erin Murphy is the director of residencies and exhibitions at ArtPace, SAMO's partner in the Wikipedia Editathon series.
But yeah, it is kind of a chicken and the egg type situation, looking at where to get information that doesn't exist in like a tangible publication, for example.
ArtPace, SAMA, and the San Antonio art community will continue the Editathon series through the end of 2020. I'm Dominic Anthony in San Antonio.
Coming up on 49 minutes past the hour, Texas Standard Time. What are Texans talking about? What do you think? We're going to be getting more comments from our social media editor in just a couple of minutes, so stick around.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Rand Group, partnering with SAP to help mid-sized companies streamline operations such as CRM, finance, and procurement. More at randgroup.com. Software delivered as promised. No surprises.
This is the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. For an illustration of just how fast concerns about the coronavirus have changed life in the U.S., just look at Wednesday night in the National Basketball Association. At 6 p.m. Central Time, the plan was to play a normal slate of six games. A couple hours later, two of those games had been called off. A player for the Utah Jazz tested positive for the coronavirus, and the entire NBA season had been postponed. Other leagues have also made changes because of the pathogen. The men's and women's NCAA basketball tournaments will be played in nearly empty arenas. Major League Baseball's regular season hasn't started yet, but there are already plans to move games out of areas heavily affected by the virus. These are all public health decisions, but ones that will surely have huge economic implications. Joining us to talk them through is Victor Matheson. He's professor of economics at College of the Holy Cross and editor of the Journal of Sports Economics. Professor Matheson, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
I wonder if it's possible to give us a sense of the financial magnitude of the NBA's decision to suspend its season.
So what's really remarkable here is that economists in general, we don't think that sports really are that big a deal, because any money that's spent on sports is money that could be spent elsewhere in the economy. But in this particular world we're talking about, and it's a world that has changed dramatically in just the last 3 weeks, canceling NBA games, canceling conferences, canceling all this sort of travel,
right,
is something that is truly a cost to the economy, because it's not like people are going to be going out to restaurants, going out to concerts instead of going to those NBA games. This is true loss for the economy, true loss for the leagues. I don't feel terrible necessarily for the players, but certainly terrible for, you know, basically event staff.
The Dallas Mavericks were playing the Denver Nuggets last night when the news broke, and there's this video clip of Mark Cuban seeing the news on his, Mark Cuban, of course, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, seeing the news pop up on his smartphone and him just becoming slack-jawed there. ESPN interviewed Mark Cuban right after the game, talking about the NBA suspending its season. Let's listen to a little clip of what he had to say.
I'm concerned about if now that we're not playing games, what about all the people who work here on an hourly basis? You know, we'll put together a program for them, but, you know, there's just so many things that go through your head, right? It's hard to know exactly what's right.
Now, this gets to a point that you were just making, right? I mean, what do you do about all of the people who are rather low paid, you know, in terms of the larger scheme of things? What do you do about and for them?
Right. So again, minimum wage workers in the first place, they likely don't have huge amounts of savings to use through the bad times, and they very likely don't have any type of paid sick leave or paid vacation. Obviously, Congress and the president are working on some sort of economic stimulus packages here. You know, this is so new, it's hard to know exactly what to do here. But I think most economists would be very strongly in favor of unemployment type programs that are specifically targeted to the sort of people who are going to lose jobs here. Not necessarily broad-based tax cuts, although those have been proposed as well. But things that really target the people who have lost their money here. folks like hourly workers and workers without sick leave.
I know you specialize in sports economics, but there's also clearly a psychological cost. Or is there? I mean, is it possible that a loss of confidence in the institution might result from fans or not so much because of the extraordinary nature of all of this?
You know, I think it was so funny that we talked about Mark Cuban because he is a person who's invested in the league, obviously as an owner, and has huge amounts of, his own personal dollars and cents riding on this. But, anyone who knows Mark Cuban also knows he's invested in the league as a fan. A lot of the leagues will be going on behind closed doors, and so the casual fan will still be able to tune into the TV and watch their games. NBA is shutting down specifically because we've got coronavirus actually in the league and among the players. Leagues with not big TV deals but big in-stadium fans like Major League Soccer, they're the ones who are going to look to postpone games because where they're making all their money is fans coming to the games, not fans watching on TV. So we have a difference in how the Major League Baseball, how the NBA, how the NCAA, and how MLS are all dealing with this because they all have different financial pressures.
Victor Matheson is a professor of economics at College of the Holy Cross. He's also editor of the Journal of Sports Economics. Thanks again for joining us.
Well, it hasn't exactly been my pleasure to be talking about this this topic today, but thank you for having me on.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. Wells Dunbar practicing all the precautions there. Yep. We got the wipes out here and keeping
it clean. Hand sanitizer and everything.
You got to do that.
But I really do.
I'm hearing that you have a little bit of breaking news here.
Yeah, we just heard about the coronavirus's impact on big events, sporting events. Mm-hmm. Well, just in the time we've been on air, ESPN and Sports Illustrated both reporting that Major League Soccer set to suspend its season.
Major League Soccer.
Yeah, until further notice because of the coronavirus. We also heard about the potential of these Final Four or rather March Madness NCAA games being played with a sparse, if any, crowd, really.
Also, the NBA.
Yeah, and the NBA just outright canceled.
Yeah.
Also, this Associated Press report Thursday morning that Congress is shutting down public access to the Capitol House and Senate office buildings until April 1st in reaction to the coronavirus. So obviously impacting plenty of events. We've spoken extensively about here in Austin, South by Southwest being canceled, its economic impact. Several music events are still going forward as of this moment, but some folks even calling that into question via Facebook. Carmen Poof says, I am rethinking my plans to come to Austin next week for the other music events that weren't canceled as part of South by Southwest. Carmen writes, a few days ago, I was willing to take my chances, but it's starting to feel irresponsible. And I guess that kind of gets to the heart of the issue that, I feel like I hit on this yesterday, but it's an important one to hit on again, that even if you aren't, elderly, part of this target demographic where you're going to get ill, people still recommending social distancing, isolation as not to, become a vector and spread it to those individuals that aren't as well equipped to combat it.
We need to mention a little bit of more breaking news here. New York Times says that a Brazilian official who was with President Trump at Mar-a-Lago 5 days ago has tested positive for the virus. That, according to Brazilian media. And we should point out, the New York Times has it on its front page right now as of just a few minutes ago. So we may be hearing more about that, I'm thinking.
Definitely,
as the day goes forward.
And, I'm just peeking over at your screen there. I see the market's tumbling again.
Not looking good.
Yeah, definitely in bull bear territory.
Yeah,
rather.
For sure.
20% down plus. So many people chiming in on social media in response to the president's address last night. Sort of more questions it raised. It was announced initially last night that this is going to be this 30-day ban on travel from Europe was even going to include cargo and trade, but apparently they since walked that back, saying it only applies to foreigners. Essentially, doesn't apply to U.S. citizens or naturalized citizens,
or British,
anyone from the United Kingdom either.
That's right. Listen, we're out of time for the big broadcast. The news continues right here on this station, so don't you touch that dial. And of course, we continue to update the situation at TexasStandard.org. We'll be back here tomorrow. We hope you'll join us. Till then, I'm David Brown, along with Wells Dunbar and the rest of the Texas Standard crew. Hoping you have a terrific Thursday.
Philanthropic support for Texas Standard comes from Casey and Scott O'Hare, the Winkler Family Foundation, Lynn Dobson and Greg Waldridge, Adrian Killam, the George Huntington Family, and the Cynthia and George Mitchell Foundation.